Welcome to Gima's Tales for Children. Each week we visit a different part of the world to hear stories, legends, and myths. Some of these stories are so old that the origin has been lost in time. Some are new, and some are timeless. Join us as we travel this week to North America. North America is one of the seven continents on the earth. It is bordered by three oceans, the Arctic, the Atlantic, and the Pacific. This continent is actually named after an Italian explorer, Amerigo Vespucci. The original people who settled here traveled by foot across the Alaskan Peninsula thousands of years ago. They are called Native Americans or Indians today. For further information about North America for Children, I suggest audizi.com. We start today with a Native American legend. It is called The Badger and the Bear. On the edge of a forest, there lived a large family of badgers. In the ground, their dwelling was made. Its walls and roof were covered with rocks and straw. Old Father Badger was a great hunter. He knew well how to track the deer and buffalo. Every day he came home carrying on his back some wild game. This kept Mother Badger very busy and the baby badgers very chubby. While the well-fed children played about, digging little make-believe dwellings, their mother hung thin sliced meats upon long willow racks. As fast as the meats were dried and seasoned by sun and wind, she packed them carefully away in a large, thick bag. This bag was like a huge, stiff envelope, but far more beautiful to see, for it was painted all over with many bright colors. These firmly tied bags of dried meat were laid upon the rocks in the walls of the dwelling. In this way, they were both useful and decorative. One day, Father Badger did not go off for a hunt. He stayed at home making new arrows. His children sat about him on the ground floor. Their small black eyes danced with delight as they watched the gay colors painted upon the arrows. All of a sudden, there was heard a heavy footfall near the entranceway. The oval-shaped door frame was pushed aside. In stepped a large black foot with a great big claw. Then the other clumsy foot came next. All the while, the baby badger stared hard at the unexpected comer. After the second foot, in peeped the head of a big black bear. His black nose was dry and parched. Silently, he entered the dwelling and sat down on the ground by the doorway. His black eyes never left the painted bags on the rocky walls. He guessed what was in them. He was a very hungry bear. Seeing the racks of red meat hanging in the yard, he had come to visit the badger family. Though he was a stranger, and his strong paws and jaws frightened the small badgers, the father said, "How, how, friend! Your lips and nose look feverish and hungry. Will you eat with us?" "Yes, my friend," said the bear, "I am starved. I saw your racks of red fresh meat, and knowing your heart is kind, I come hither. Give me meat to eat, my friend." Hereupon, the mother badger took long strides across the room, and as she had to pass in front of the strange visitor, she said, "Ahan, allow me to pass," which was an apology. "How, how," replied the bear, drawing himself closer to the wall and crossing his shins together. Mother Badger chose the most tender red meat, and soon over a bed of coals she broiled the venison. That day the bear had all he could eat. At nightfall he rose, and smacking his lips together, that is the noisy way of saying the food was very good, he left the badger dwelling. The baby badgers, peeping through the door flap after the shaggy bear, saw him disappear into the woods nearby. Day after day, the crackling of twigs in the forest told of heavy footsteps. Out would come the same black bear. He never lifted the door flap, but thrusting it aside, entered slowly in. All was in the same place, by the entrance way he sat down with crossed shins. His daily visits were so regular that Mother Badger placed a fur rug in his place. She did not wish a guest in her dwelling to sit upon the bare, hard ground. At last, one day when the bear returned, his nose was bright and black. His coat was glossy. He had grown fat upon the badger's hospitality. As he entered the dwelling, a pair of wicked gleams shot out of his shaggy head. Surprised by the strange behavior of the guest who remained standing upon the rug, leaning his round back against the wall, Father Badger queried, "How, my friend, what?" The bear took one stride forward and shook his paw in the badger's face. He said, "I am strong, very strong." "Yes, yes, so you are," replied the badger. From the farther end of the room, Mother Badger muttered over her beadwork, "Yes, you grew strong from our well-filled bowls." The bear smiled, showing a row of large, sharp teeth. "I have no dwelling. I have no bags of dried meat. I have no arrows. All these I have found here on this spot," said he, stamping his heavy foot. "I want them. See, I am strong," repeated he, lifting both his terrible paws. Quietly the father badger spoke. "I fed you. I called you friend, though you came here a stranger and a beggar. For the sake of my little ones, leave us in peace." Mother Badger, in her excited way, had pierced hard through the buckskin and stuck her fingers repeatedly with her sharp awl until she had laid aside her work. Now, while her husband was talking to the bear, she motioned with her hands to the children. On tiptoe, they hastened to her side. For reply came a low growl. It grew louder and more fierce. "Roar!" He roared and by force hurled the badgers out. First the father badger, then the mother. The little badgers he tossed by pairs. He threw them hard upon the ground. Standing in the entranceway and showing his ugly teeth, he snarled, "Begone!" The father and mother badger, having gained their feet, picked up their kicking little babes and, wailing aloud, drew the air into their flattened lungs till they could stand alone upon their feet. No sooner had the baby badgers caught their breath than they howled and shrieked with pain and fright. Ah, what a dismal cry was theirs as the whole badger family went forth wailing from out their own dwelling. A little distance away from their stolen house, the father badger built a small round hut. He made it of bent willows and covered it with dry grass and twigs. This was shelter for the night, but alas, it was empty of food and arrows. All day Father Badger prowled through the forest, but without his arrows he could not get food for his children. Upon his return, the cry of the little ones for meat, the sad quiet of the mother with bowed head, hurt him like a poisoned arrow wound. "I'll beg meat for you," said he in an unsteady voice. Covering his head and entire body in a long, loose robe, he halted beside the big black bear. The bear was slicing red meat to hang upon the rack. He did not pause for a look at the comer. As the badger stood there unrecognized, he saw that the bear had brought with him his whole family. Little cubs played under the high-hanging new meats. They laughed and pointed with their wee noses upward at the thin sliced meats upon the poles. "Have you no heart, black bear? My children are starving. Give me a small piece of meat for them," begged the badger. "Warr!" growled the angry bear and pounced upon the badger. "Begone!" said he, and with his big hind foot he sent Father Badger sprawling on the ground. All the little ruffian bears hooted and shouted, "Ha ha!" to see the beggar fall upon his face. There was one, however, who did not even smile. He was the youngest cub. His fur coat was not as black and glossy as those his elders wore. The hair was dry and dingy. It looked much more like kinky wool. He was the ugly cub. Poor little baby bear. He had always been laughed at by his older brothers. He could not help being himself. He could not change the differences between himself and his brothers. Thus again, though the rest laughed aloud at the badger's fall, he did not see the joke. His face was long and earnest. In his heart he was sad to see the badgers crying and starving. In his breast spread a burning desire to share his food with them. "I shall not ask my father to meet to give away. He would say no. Then to my brothers, they would laugh at me," said the ugly baby bear to himself. In an instant, as if his good intention had passed from him, he was singing happily and skipping around his father at work. Singing in his high, small voice and dragging his feet in long strides after him, as if a prankish spirit oozed out from his heels, He strayed off through the tall grass. He was ambling toward the small round hut. When directly in front of the entranceway, he made a quick side kick with his left hind leg. Lo! There fell into the badger's hut a piece of fresh meat. It was tough meat, full of sinews, yet it was the only piece he could not take without his father's notice. Thus, having given meat to the hungry badgers, the ugly baby bear ran quickly away to his father again. On the following day, the father badger came back once more. He stood watching the big bear cutting thin slices of meat. "Give," he began, when the bear, turning upon him with a growl, thrust him cruelly aside. The badger fell on his hands. He fell where the grass was wet with the blood of the newly carved buffalo. His keen, starving eyes caught sight of a little red clot lying bright upon the green. Looking fearfully toward the bear and seeing his head was turned away, he snatched up the small piece of blood. Underneath his girdle blanket, he hid it in his hand. On his return to his family, he said within himself, "I'll pray the Great Spirit to bless it." Thus he built a small round lodge. Sprinkling water upon the heated heap of sacred stones within, he made ready to purge his body. "The buffalo blood, too, must be purified before I ask a blessing upon it," thought the badger. He carried it into the sacred vapor lodge. After placing it near the sacred stones, he sat down beside it. After a long silence, he muttered, "Great Spirit, bless this little buffalo blood." Then he arose and, with a quiet dignity, stepped out of the lodge. Close behind him, someone followed. The badger turned to look over his shoulder, and to his great joy, he beheld a Dakota brave in handsome buckskins. In his hand, he carried a magic arrow. Across his back dangled a long, fringed quiver. In answer to the badger's prayer, the avenger had sprung from out of the red globules. "My savior!" exclaimed the badger with extended right hand. "Aye, friendly badger," replied the brave, "I am your avenger." Immediately the badger told the sad story of his hungry little ones and the stingy bear. Listening closely, the young man stood looking steadily upon the ground. At length the father badger moved away. "Where?" queried the avenger. "My son, we have no food. I am going to beg for meat," answered the badger. "Then I go with you," replied the young brave. This made the old badger happy. He was proud of his son. He was delighted to be called father by the very first human creature. The bear saw the badger coming in the distance. He narrowed his eyes at the tall stranger walking beside him. He spied the arrow. At once he guessed it was the avenger of whom he had heard long, long ago. As they approached, the bear stood erect with a hand on his thigh. He smiled upon them. "How, badger, my friend, here is my knife. Cut your favorite pieces from the deer," said he, holding out a long, thin blade. "How?" said the badger eagerly. He wondered what had inspired the big bear to such a generous deed. The young avenger waited till the badger took the long knife in his hand. Gazing full into the black bear's face, he said, "I come to do justice. You have returned only a knife to my friend the badger. Now return to him his dwelling." His voice was deep and powerful. In his black eyes burned a steady fire. The long, strong teeth of the bear rattled against each other, and his shaggy body shook with fear. "How?" cried he, as if he had been shot. Running into the dwelling, he gasped, breathless and trembling. "Come out, all of you. This is the badger's dwelling. We must flee to the forest for fear of the avenger who carries the magic arrow." Out they hurried, all the bears, and disappeared into the woods. Singing and laughing, the badgers returned to their own dwelling. Then the avenger left them. "I go," said he, imparting over the earth. And the badger family bowed their heads in thanks and returned to their home. Our next story is a contemporary version which is based on a legend of the Native Americans who still live here in Brookings, Oregon, the Talawa tribe. Here is How a Wise Dog Saved the First People by E.G. French. Many moons ago, the first people lived at the mouth of the mighty river Chiho. Actually, they stayed only during the months when the sun warmed the land. When the weather turned cold and the mighty winds whipped up huge waves, the people would move into the inland valleys for protection from the fierce storms. Each night, when the sun left the sky, the families would light their fires, cook their meals, and go to bed. On one particular night, the young people decided to stay up, so they kept the fire burning brightly and laughed and chattered into the late hours. They had one very wise dog that could understand humans and thoroughly enjoyed their conversations. No one knows how this dog came to understand human language so well, but it is said to this day, wise dog's children and all their children understand humans quite well. The people didn't know he understood them, for he could only understand, he could not speak to them. Wise dog had learned many things from sitting at the campfire. As everyone knows, humans are the smartest of all creatures, even though they sometimes act quite foolishly. True, they couldn't smell very well or understand the signs of the land, but Wise Dog knew they had a different kind of knowledge. He paid close attention when they spoke, in hopes of learning as much as he could. Mostly he enjoyed listening to the elders because they knew the most. He knew all their stories, as he always made a point to stay at the campfire when they were present. On this particular night, he was listening to the young people laugh and joke and was actually getting bored. It was unusual for humans to stay up this late, way past the setting of the sun. He yawned and stretched, thinking he would give up his seat by the warm fire and go find a nice blanket where he could curl up. He walked away from the campfire and under the faint moonlight spied a blanket on the ground by the river. He circled several times before lying down with a contented sigh. Wise Dog knew it was important for him to provide early warnings of any possible danger, so he listened to the distant chatter. His sharp ears caught the rest of the night sounds. A whooshing sound rose up from the river. Curious, he rose and stepped to the river's edge. There below him, he saw two fish, no, three, four, all rushing toward the ocean. More fish struggled behind them, so many even Wise Dog couldn't count them all. A small herd of elk appeared across the river. They looked out to sea and turned as one, racing toward the mountains. Behind them came the deer, followed by the little creatures of the land, raccoons, skunks, opossums, running or shuffling. Opossums can't move very fast, as quickly as their short legs could carry them. Every few seconds they looked back at the ocean. He remembered the stories elders had told at their campfires when he was just a pup, and one story in particular that had made him quiver with fear. The elders called it the story of the Big Waters. It told of the mighty ocean coming onto the land, not just as waves, but as surging walls of water so high they darkened the sky, water that crushed and destroyed everything on land. Only those fortunate few that ran fast enough to reach the highest mountaintops escaped. It happened so fast, so the elders said, that only the young and fleet of foot could get away. Wise Dog knew what he had to do. He knew what he saw could only mean one thing. The Big Waters were on their way to the valley where his people lay sleeping. This was his time, his moment to do the job he was born to do, sound the alarm to save his humans. As he ran back to the campfire, he lifted his sharp nose and realized there was no time to waste. The smell of salt wafted in from the ocean. The Big Waters were not far behind. Wise Dog raced into the circle around the campfire, barking a warning, get up, run, run. The young humans merely looked at him, astonished. What is he doing? Why is our dog barking? Asked one. What's going on? Asked another. Hush, dog, you'll wake our parents, said a third. Wise Dog barked again, wondering why they couldn't understand him. He looked at him with big eyes, pleading for understanding.
Brrr,
he voiced.
Brrr,
he tried one more time. With all his might, he reared up on his hind feet, opened his mouth, and said,
run.
The young people were shocked. Had their dog just spoken to them?
Run,
Wise Dog cried.
Run, run, run.
Exhausted, he dropped to four legs, panting. The young people ran. They went first to the elders and woke them. Wise Dog ran up to us at the campfire, stood up on his hind legs, and then spoke to us. He said to run. One of the elders stood up. He was their chief. In a commanding voice, he said, "This is the warning we have been waiting for, children. Our legends tell us that a dog will give us a warning that the big waters are coming. You must run as fast as you can to the top of Mount Enmai." He stepped forward and pointed to the mountains on the other side of the valley. "You must run now. Mount Enmai is the only place where you will be safe." The young people pulled at their parents. "Get up, get up. Come with us to safety." But the elders only looked sadly at their young. Their chief spoke again. "No, we are too old. We cannot run fast enough. You go. This is your time to escape and live to tell our stories to your children. We will always love you and look after you from the heavens above." The young people ran up to Mount Enmai along with Wise Dog. They watched as the big waters swept in and devoured all the land at the very mountain where they stood. Wise Dog survived and was able to pass his wisdom unto all his children. Now we're going to hear about a famous legend from the Old West. Here is Pecos Bill Rides a Tornado, a Kansas Tall Tale. Now everyone in the West knows that Pecos Bill could ride anything. No bronco could throw him. No, sir. Fact is, I only heard of Bill getting thrown once in his whole career as a cowboy. Yep, it was that time he was up Kansas way and decided to ride him a tornado. Now, Bill wasn't gonna ride just any tornado. No, ma'am. He waited for the biggest gall darn tornado you ever saw. It was turning the sky black and green and roaring so loud it woke up the farmers way over in China. Well, Bill just grabbed that there tornado, pushed it to the ground, and jumped on its back. The tornado whipped and whirled and sidewinded and generally cussed its bad luck all the way down to Texas, tied the rivers into knots, flattened all the forests so bad they had to rename one place the Staked Plains. But Bill just rode along all calm-like, gave it an occasional jab with his spurs. Finally, that tornado decided it wasn't getting this cowboy off its back no-how. So it headed west to California and just rained itself out. Made so much water it washed out the Grand Canyon. That tornado was down to practically nothing when Bill finally fell off. He hit the ground so hard it sank below sea level. Folks called the spot Death Valley. Anyway, that's how rodeos got started, though most cowboys stick to broncos these days. Our last story is about Briar Rabbit and comes from the state of Georgia. Here is Briar Rabbit Earns $1 a Minute. One fine morning, Briar Fox decided to plant him a patch of goober peas. He set to with a will, and before you know it, he had raked and hoed out a beautiful patch of ground, and he put in a fine planting of peas. It didn't take too long before those goober vines grew tall and long, and the peas ripened up good and smart. Now, Briar Rabbit, he'd watched Briar Fox planting the goobers, and he told his children and Ms. Rabbit where they could find the patch. Soon as those peas were ripe, the little rabbits and Briar Rabbit would sneak on in and grab up them goobers by the handfuls. It got so bad that when Briar Fox came to the goober patch, he could hardly find a pea to call his own. Well, Briar Fox, he was plenty mad that he'd worked so hard on those peas, only to have them eaten by someone else. He suspected that Briar Rabbit was to blame for this, but the rascally rabbit had covered his tracks so well that Briar Fox couldn't catch him. So Briar Fox came up with a plan. He found a smooth spot in his fence where a cunning rabbit could sneak in, and he set a trap for Briar Rabbit at that spot. He tied a rope to a nearby hickory sapling and bent it nearly double. Then took the other end of the rope and made a loop knot that he fastened with a trigger right behind the hole in the fence. If anybody came through the crack to steal his peas, the knot would tighten around their body, the sapling would spring upright, and they'd be left hanging from the tree for everyone to see. The next morning, Briar Rabbit came a-hopping through the hole in the fence. At once, the trigger sprung, the knot tightened on his forelegs, and the hickory tree snapped upright, quick as you please. Briar Rabbit found himself swung aloft between the heaven and the earth, swinging from the hickory sapling. He couldn't go up and he couldn't go down. He just went back and forth. Briar Rabbit was in a fix, no mistake. He was trying to come up with some glib explanation for Br'er Fox when he heard someone a rumbling and a bumbling down the road. It was Br'er Bear looking for a bee tree so he could get some honey. As soon as Br'er Rabbit saw Br'er Bear, he came up with a plan to get himself free. "Howdy, Br'er Bear," he called cheerfully. Br'er Bear squinted around here and there, wondering where the voice had come from. Then he looked up and saw Br'er Rabbit swinging from the sapling.
"Howdy, Br'er Rabbit," he rumbled. "How are you this morning?"
"Middling, Br'er Bear," Rabbit replied. "Just middling." Br'er Bear was wondering why Br'er Rabbit was up in the tree, so he asked him about it. Br'er Rabbit grinned and said that he was earning $1 a minute from Br'er Fox.
"$1 a minute?" Br'er Bear exclaimed. "What for?"
"I'm keeping the crows away from his goober patch," Br'er Bear explained, and went on to say that Br'er Fox was paying $1 a minute to whomever could act as a scarecrow for him. Well, Br'er Bear liked the sound of that. He had a big family to feed, and he could use the money. When Br'er Rabbit asked him if he would like to have the job, Br'er Bear agreed. Br'er Rabbit showed him how to bend the sapling down and remove the knot from his forepaws. When Br'er Rabbit was free, Br'er Bear climbed into the knot, and soon he was hanging aloft betwixt heaven and earth, swinging from the sapling and growling at the birds to keep them away from the goober patch. Br'er Rabbit laughed and laughed at the sight of Br'er Bear up in the sapling. He scampered down the road to Br'er Fox's place and told him that his trap was sprung and the goober thief was hanging from the hickory tree. Br'er Fox grabbed his walking stick and ran down the road after Br'er Rabbit. When he saw Br'er Bear hanging there, Br'er Fox called him a goober thief. Br'er Fox ranted and raved and threatened to hit Br'er Bear with his walking stick. He yelled so loud that Br'er Bear didn't have time to explain nothing. Br'er Rabbit knew that Br'er Bear would be plenty mad at him when he found out he'd been tricked, and so he ran down the road and hid in the mud beside the pond so that only his eyeballs stuck out, making him look like a big old bullfrog. By and by, a very grumpy Br'er Bear came lumbering down the road.
"Howdy, Br'er Bullfrog," Br'er Bear said when he saw Br'er Rabbit's eyes sticking out of the mud. "You seen Br'er Rabbit anywhere?"
"Br'er Rabbit just ran on down the road," he told the grumpy Br'er Bear in a deep croaking voice that sounded just like the sound of a frog.
Br'er Bear thanked him and trotted down the road, growling fiercely. When Br'er Bear was out of sight, Br'er Rabbit jumped out of the mud. He washed himself off in the pond and then scampered home, chuckling to himself at how he'd escaped from Br'er Fox and Br'er Bear, and already thinking up a new way to get into Br'er Fox's goober patch to get him some peas to eat. So we've come to the end of our time together today. If you have a story you'd like to hear, please feel free to write me with your request. If you've written a children's story and would like to share it, let me know as well. I welcome your feedback. You can email me at guima@kciw.org. That's guima@kciw.org. See you next week. Same time, same place, but very different stories. We'll be traveling to the land of leprechauns and banshees, Ireland. Stay safe, have fun, and let your imagination soar. This is Guima saying goodbye and happy reading. This has been a production of KCIW LP 100.7 FM in Brookings, Oregon.